Dice. This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
In the studio with me is Tom, and yeah, it's just us this week. It's two-hander. We're all alone in the studio, but it's going to be good.
It'll be cooler in here.
It will be cooler.
In both senses.
It's going to be like a late-night jazz show, like you said. Tamasha, which is the number 8 entry.
Yeah, Tamasha. It's my first Hindi film. I don't know. I always fear I'm going to say something racist when I'm talking about an entire aspect of cinema I don't know anything about.
Is this the first Bollywood film you've ever seen?
Ever seen, yeah. And obviously also the only one at the cinema. There was only one other person in the screen with me, which made it very awkwardly intimate. And it was interesting. No, yeah, it was very bombastic, as I guess you'd expect. I think the thing with it was kind of when you're, it's not just like another nation, because obviously you get French films, you get German film, but they all tend to still be made in a kind of Western mode. Whereas this is just sort of so different to stuff you're used to in sort of length and context and sort of where they place the import, like what they value most within the film kind of thing compared to what you do. So it's really quite interesting.
I feel like you should caveat every single sentence with this being the only Bollywood film I've seen.
This is true, yeah. My understanding is, I did a little bit of reading around it, is that people sort of, it kind of breaks a fair bit with like traditions in that it's, I don't want to make it sound too much like this, but it does gear towards sort of the more intellectual. Basically, the plot, as I understood it, it opens on a theatre production involving a robot and a clown, and then it zooms into a room sort of on the stage, and then it sort of cuts to like the real life version of that, which is a child who's obsessed with stories, and then he goes every day to this storyteller who sits on a hill, and then the storyteller starts telling him this story of this couple that meet in
Corsica. Oh my goodness,
Corsica.
There are so many stories and stories.
Yeah, that's basically sort of enraptured with the idea of just telling stories for the sake of it. And then these two that meet in Corsica, rather than sort of, because they know they'll probably never see each other again, they sort of make this agreement to not tell each other the truth about anything. So they sort of imagine like that these characters, and it's kind of like that. And then obviously they bump into each other when they go back to India. And then it's sort of like the real life of that juxtaposed with this kind of fanciful quality they'd made for themselves and stuff like this. Only that this story that's being told actually turns out to be the future of the boy who goes to see the story.
It sounds so
confusing.
And so
it all folds in on itself. And then that play you saw at the start turns out was created by him. And
let's focus on quality. What did you think of it?
I thought it was really interesting. Sort of that sort of side of it, all the kind of different windows within windows kind of thing, I thought was really interesting and quite almost French New Wave. But then sort of after what the time it spends, it's sort of a crash of different kind of visual styles and things. It's really sort of vibrant and dynamic. And then when it gets into this sort of relationship in Corsica, it was nice, and I thought it was far more convincingly played than another film we'll talk about later. And it was really interesting.
I bet that film is Black Mass.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
You'll be surprised.
Is it Carol then?
It's Carol. And then it sort of slips into this kind of lull for the middle 45 minutes, maybe. I think it's 2 hours 20 minutes, which in my understanding is probably quite brief for a Bollywood film. And
I don't know, I know even less than you on the subject, so
my understanding is they're very long. They tend to always have intermissions. I'm just speaking authoritatively about one film I've seen. I know they tend to have intermissions, as this one did, and I think that's probably what killed a lot of my interest in it. Had it just progressed straight through, which I'd have been fine with. I'm capable of sitting through 2.5 hours without a break. It would have been probably more engaging, but that 10 minutes sort of then emphasised sort of how different the second half was to the first half. And then it picks up again and sort of does all this kind of, it's sort of bookended by these kind of crazy, vibrant,
it has
in
to be
love
bookended
with
that many stories and stories. You've got to get to the end of
like a babushka doll. Yeah, it was. What was interesting though was its sort of attitude towards love, and it's kind of like really messy and violent and kind of really aggressive as this the lead actor sort of basically gets called out by the woman for being sort of really dull and like in the rat race kind of thing. And there just seems to be a lot of like things that would be grandstanding gestures in Hollywood where someone sort of goes, you know, I'm not going to go anywhere kind of thing. And then it's sort of immediately dashed away. I'm like, fine, then I'll go and just walk off.
Right.
And so it would continually kind of smash through these kind of things that you would probably expect in a Hollywood film as to be, oh, this is leading into the resolution. And then it never seems to come. And I thought that was very interesting.
It's cold now, so people are staying indoors.
Curling up with the radio.
They're like, nah, I'm staying in. I'm putting a blanket on my lap and I'm going to listen to the film show. So let's continue with the UK box office top 10. Number 6 is...
Speaking of blankets and laps.
Yes, indeed. Oh my God, that was such a good segue. Not even planned. The Lady in the Van, which I saw earlier today. Alex Jennings plays Alan Bennett. And Maggie Smith plays Miss Mary Margaret Teresa Shepherd, who lived in a van in his driveway for 15 years, based on, it says a mostly true story, I believe, is the text at the beginning. I really liked how kind of outlandish it was in its portrayal of the, you know, writing as a process.
Yeah.
And it was very aware of narrative. It was playful with it in a way that I didn't expect.
I didn't expect that, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot more
British,
by the book.
Yes.
But Alex Jennings plays two Alan Bennetts. He plays the writer Alan Bennett and he plays the living Alan Bennett, and they interact and argue.
That first started, I thought, oh no. I just felt it was just going to be annoying. I think they used it quite well.
Yeah, they didn't overdo it. I thought it, like I say, it was unexpected, and then it made it work really well. There are moments when they deliberately take you out of the narrative with bits.
She didn't do this, she didn't say this. Which I thought was nice and honest.
Yeah, it was, like I say, really playful with the narrative. What did you think overall?
I found bits of it more interesting than others. Like, she was infuriating in a lot of ways. Obviously, I guess she was as a person.
Yeah,
but
I think that's
it's
the
one
point.
Of those things that she, I don't know, I it's one of those things that go away. I don't care about you anymore. You're too old to still be alive and you should probably leave.
Ooh.
But I don't know. I think it was probably because of the opening. I don't know whether or not they wanted it to be kind of suspenseful, because there's a through line, a sort of a mystery dark side to it.
Yeah, her storyline.
And it sort of starts on a black screen with a sort of significant sound effect, and then obviously the opening scene sort of gives a lot away, and I don't know whether or not how intentional it was to sort of reveal stuff, because it was then later on when stuff was revealed, it was done in an almost surprise, and like, but it's not though, is it? You've given us all the information necessary, and so I never knew quite how to feel about that stuff. But I found the sort of comparison with his mother really interesting, in the fact that Alan Bennett had a mother who was sort of had dementia, I guess, and sort of ends up in
it's
a
one
home.
Of those things that isn't named, because it's a kind of, I think, 60s period piece,
70s, 80s, traveled through.
I'm very bad at aging cars. That's the main indicator in the film, is the cars, and I'm not very good at that.
I'm sure there was years given for her on her grave or something. No, not yet. There was some years given somewhere, I'm sure of it. And I feel it's definitely through the 70s. And and sort of, so his mother, he sort of feels a bit of guilt towards it, but never sort of, she always talks about wanting to, I think she was in Heartbeat. I meant to look that up and it bothered me the whole way through. I started thinking, I don't know, Heartbeat.
You watch Heartbeat?
I don't, but it was the sort of thing that used to be on every Sunday in my house. And so I saw a damn lot more of it than I ever wanted to.
My dad used to watch a lot of Heartbeat and I can't picture her.
Oh no, I'll look her up. I'm sure it was. It was the voice that did it. So it may just be the northern voice that I just assume everyone is the same person up north.
Man, can you ostracise more people? Old people and people from the north.
I did quite well on not upsetting any Indian people, I think, earlier, so I've just decided to come in and ruin everyone else's day. and sort of comparing, like, him feeling sort of guilty towards not caring for her, but caring for this utter stranger, and the sort of, it's not even that she's a surrogate mother, because, like, his real one still exists, it's just he sort of replaced her, and I thought that was quite an interesting tension that he explored. But then the rest of it, I don't know.
I liked it a lot. I kind of had fears that it was going to be a sort of by-the-book adaptation based on a true story. Maybe a bit whimsical, because the trailer portrayed a lot of whimsy and that kind of annoyed me. But it was a lot more interesting than I had expected, and I liked it a lot.
I thought it also was very interesting for how it sort of portrayed the people on the street, kind of the whole being uncomfortable but not wanting to be villains towards kind of a homeless person, and sort of attitudes towards poverty and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Oh,
which
my God.
Alan Bennett,
the characterization of the middle class suburban folk was hilarious.
Alan Bennett, I think I read elsewhere, did say that was one of his sort of conscious efforts to sort of depict this kind of stuff that generally gets ignored.
What did you think of the final scene? It's quite... Without spoiling it,
the final, the very final, where the real Alan Bennett.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. And sort of that coupled with the scene before that with Maggie
I found
Smith,
it so uplifting.
I found it all very much like a Lars von Trier film.
And
I,
really?
Yeah, I just sat there. There's a particular one, and I can't say because it will ruin the end of that, but there's a particular early von Trier film that has a very similar ending to the resolution. Huh?
Carry on.
We can talk during the song, don't whisper. You'll throw me off my groove.
Sorry, I forgot we went on TV for a second.
And yeah, and it very much sort of Maggie Smith's resolution is very much like a particular von Trier film. And then sort of the playfulness with kind of filming and the sort of techniques of filming. There's a moment in the extended version of Nymphomaniac that's very much like the last scene. I was like, this can't be intentional, but it just seems really bizarre that immediately after another, there's two examples where it's really like this kind of provocative art house director.
Yeah, see,
in
it's
this
an
British
interesting film.
Yeah.
I think that's the message to take away, is that it's not what you'd expect. It's it's good in that way.
This is Mark Kermode. This is the Film Show on URN.
Yes, it is the Film Show.
I didn't realise we had that ident.
Yes, we did. It's from a few years ago when they did an interview. We use it at 8:30 every single week.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Joined in the studio by James Goodison. Welcome, James.
Hello.
So let's carry on with UK box office top 10. Spectre, which I still haven't seen because still out. It's still going to be out for ages, you know what I mean?
You'll never see it. And you're the one I'm most interested to hear the response to.
Because I'm not a Bond
care.
Fan.
Yes, yeah. You don't have that emotional investment.
Well, I will. I'll try and see it before next week's show.
Please do.
Yeah, I would.
Even if I have to force
do
you.
Do my utmost. I've got a very difficult
degree.
I will
drag you to the cinema, then walk out so I don't have to sit through it again.
James,
and come
you've
back
seen Spectre, haven't you?
Yes,
I have. I've heard you talk about it on other shows even.
The Popular Table, I spoke briefly about it, yeah. I saw it on opening night. I used to have a tradition with my dad to go and see all the Bond films. It's the first time I broke it. And it wasn't worth breaking the tradition for, in my opinion. The film starts in Mexico City with Carnival of the Dead, I think. You know, I don't know the Spanish term. There's this amazing, amazing long tracking shot straight from the start. Wonderful. Follows Bond through the streets, into the hotel, up the elevator, into the room, out the window. And I thought it was going to go on forever and ever. And I sort of had to check myself three or four times. Like, wait, is this the same shot? Did I miss a cut? Did I not? Really, really lovely, lovely start. That's probably the best part of the film.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that.
Yeah, the cinematography, the colour was great. What to say about the rest of it?
It's like having two me's on here, really. Isn't it?
I think that it was.
I haven't actually heard good things really on the Film Show about it. All the good things I've heard externally.
I think that they tried too hard to tie together films which have been out for, you know, almost a decade in terms of, like, you can't tie a trilogy together like that. I don't think it worked. I thought it was a bit sloppy. The fact that Quantum of Solace was abandoned as an organisation didn't really work when fitting into it. I felt very sorry for Christopher Waltz, who showed flashes of his acting ability, but I think was let down with the writing and perhaps to a degree the directing as well. I thought that it was the closest thing to a Pierce Brosnan sort of Die Another Day Bond that we've had in
Die Craig's Another Day time. Is really enjoyable.
I know, but in terms of the plot and the effects, you understand?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Which was a shame. I thought that the plan with C. Andrew Scott, by the way, plays Moriarty. That was
annoying to me.
Yeah, it was simply, oh, we need some an intelligent, you know, bad guy who gives a sort of civil service sort of appeal.
Spoilers.
Andrew Scott
doesn't wear socks.
Yeah,
I know that much.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, and he literally just, you know, I was sitting there going, oh, Moriarty's turned up. Not this character who's expected to be. One thing I did like was Ralph Fiennes and sort of the Moneypenny and others get a little bit of a nice little role at the end, which I thought was quite cool. Overall, definitely not the best Bond film out there. Watchable, you know. I did enjoy the score. I thought the score was very good.
They're always going to be good, aren't they?
Exactly.
In big budget Bond films.
And I think that the film suffered from the fact that nobody seems to know if Daniel Craig's staying or going, because they weren't sure whether to tie it up or leave it open, which they ended up doing both somehow, which I would give them credit for, except
the way they do it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, not definitely not the best.
This is literally everything I've ever seen.
I will add one more thing. I think that it is like, you can imagine Skyfall being a a Skyfall is a good spy film, but not, it doesn't go to the tropes of Bond. You could say that. Spectre is, so in my opinion, the same sort of breed, but a lot rougher around the edges, I think, when it comes to that.
I've really got to see it because I don't know what I will think. Views have been so divided, and I don't understand how a film can split views in the way that Spectre has, because it's not really a love or hate thing. It's just no one seems to agree.
I think it depends where you're approaching it from. Like, obviously, you'll be approaching it different to us because we have this kind of tradition of caring for Bond, whereas you don't. So maybe
Skyfall because it was a good film. Not because
I think that might be where the divide comes in, though.
Yeah,
like exactly, like whether it's just like, yeah, Bond people.
There are definitely Bond fans that like it, though. I think maybe older Bond fans that really have a soft spot for Roger Moore.
So do I. He's my favourite. I love the Roger Moores, and this was a shambles.
I don't know. I will have to see it, and then I will cast my judgment, my all important judgment.
This is URN, the film show breakdown.